Tom Reed is from BelieveTheHypeNBA.com, and he joins us to talk about the NBA. G'day, Tom.
Hey, Brett, how are you going?
Pretty good, and your Twitter handle is at BTHypeNBA. Joakim Noah out for 4 to 6 months for the Chicago Bulls, dislocated his shoulder. How big of a blow is that for Chicago?
This is a huge blow for the Chicago Bulls. I mean, as you said, they've announced that he's going to have a surgery to fully strengthen his dislocated shoulder. Recovery time, you have 4 to 6 months. He got tangled up with JaVale McGee from the Dallas Mavericks during the Bulls' 77-83 loss to the Mavericks. He was yelling in pain and immediately ran off the court to the locker room. And it hurts the Bulls because they've got a really crowded big man rotation with Noah, Pau Gasol, Taj Gibson, Nikola Mirotic and Bobby Portis. And they were looking to potentially trade one of these guys to bring in a shooter or another ball handler to alleviate some of the pressure on Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose. And Noah was the guy that everyone was sort of thinking, well, he might be the odd man out, the guy that they might, you know, trade because of his value to bring back a really good piece. And with him gone, whilst it sort of helps Fred Hoiberg sort out the front court rotation because it's not as busy without him there, addition by subtraction, but it finds it harder for them to really find a decent trading partner to help the Chicago Bulls out where they really need help on the perimeter.
Yeah, because they get nothing from Noah in the short term. His former coach, Tom Thibodeau, could be in line for the Nets gig. We mentioned at the moment the Hawks are pulling their pants down. They're leading by close to 30 points.
Yeah, the Nets right now are an absolute train wreck, and Tom Thibodeau is the most accomplished coach available on the market, or the most accomplished NBA coach. They're also linked to John Calipari, who's demanding a huge, you know, potential $12 million a year salary if he's going to move from Kentucky over to the NBA. But Tibbs, who posted a career record of 64.7% winning percentage in his five seasons at Chicago, he's available. He's looking for the best job right now. For me, I feel that even though they're going to push for him hard, they're probably going to offer him more money than any other team would be able to offer him. It doesn't make a lot of sense for me for Tibbs to potentially go to the Nets because it's a really tough situation. They've got no draft picks in the short term or even sort of mid-term future, limited players with decent trade value. They're going to have a really, really tough couple of years coming up, even as tough as what we're seeing this year. It's a hard front office to deal with. Mikhail Prokhorov, their owner, is way too hands-on. Billy King, the general manager, his role is becoming more and more limited. And so for someone like Tibbs, even though it'll probably be some of the best money you could get offered, do you really want that stress, or do you want to wait until the off-season when a better job might come along?
And that's the question. How much of the Nets' form can we attribute to their coach, Tony Brown, and how much of it can we attribute to them trading their life away?
Well, Brown's only really just come in to take over the head coaching job. And I mean, the coaching staff at the Nets, you can't really put any of the situation that they're on them at all. Lionel Hollins was really unfortunate to sort of get the axe, but a blessing in disguise for him because now he can go and find a better job. It all comes down to the front office, and it goes back to when they traded a few years ago to bring in Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Jason Terry, get this group of veterans together to compete with the Miami Heat for a championship. They went all in. They sold the farm, got rid of all their assets to go for this one shot at a championship, and it all backfired. And they're still feeling the ramifications now from that. So it's the front office and the ownership that are really the ones to blame, and unfortunately not the coaching staff. But the coaching staff are the ones that get the bung end of the stick for this.
And Manu Ginobili might be the first basketballer to go straight from the court to the old folks' home. He's about to play his 900th game, and I can't see him ever retiring.
Well, I hope he never retires because he's still playing at a really high level. His Eurostep's still as good as ever. He's one of only two players since 1966 who were drafted after the first round to play 900 games. Calvin Murphy, the Houston Rockets legend, was the other one. And Ginobili, who was drafted by the Spurs in 99 with the 57th overall pick, didn't play with them until 2002. He started off his career in Europe. He's playing really well. He's got a great role still coming off the bench, averaging 10 points in 20 minutes. He's shooting 46% off the bench, which is just a little bit above his career average. And he's even though he's 38 years old, he's still playing some of the best defense of his career. He's averaging 96 points per 100 possessions defensive rating right now, which is one of the best in the league. And even though a lot of that is attributed to the Spurs defensive system, the fact that Ginobili is able to fit in so well defensively with the Spurs at his age is an absolute credit to him. The amount of work he puts in to his body in the off season and how Pop's able to manage his minutes.
All right, give us your top three moments of the week from the NBA.
Well, number three, I'm sticking with the Spurs. The Spurs, they beat the Cavs to win their 10th straight game a couple of days ago. And a lot of that comes down to Tony Parker and what he was able to do in that game. The Spurs beat Cleveland 99-95, and Tony Parker, who a lot of people thought was really coming towards the end of his twilight of his career and not playing as well as he had been, pulled out a performance of the ages, 24 points off 11 for 18 shooting. He was coming up against Kyrie, who's been playing really well since he's been back from injury, and he dominated him in that matchup. The Cavs started off with a big 32-20 lead, but Parker and Kawhi Leonard chipped away and were able to get the win. And look at the Spurs right now. They've got they've won 10 straight. They've won 23 straight at home this season, 32 back to last season. And their net rating right now, they're arguably, even looking at the Golden State Warriors, they're arguably the best team in basketball right now. Their net rating is 3 points per 100 possessions better than the Warriors. And if they sustain their current net rating, that'll be the best net rating that any team has had since the Jordan Bulls 72-10 season.
And number two, Butler, he had an unbelievable game against Philly in OT. That might have affected him against Dallas because he didn't shoot the ball so well with just 4 points on 2 of 11. But against Philly, he was on fire.
Yeah, he was. And I mean, it was the Philadelphia 76ers, but then again, you look at the Philadelphia 76ers, they're about to pull off a win against Portland right now. But now, Jimmy Butler, career high 53 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, went 15 for 30 from the field in the game, 21 from 25 from the line. He's the first Bulls player to score 50 points in a game since Jamal Crawford, and brought back a lot of memories of Michael Jordan's double nickel game, 55-point performance. He shot well from outside. It was his driving the lane, attacking the rim, forcing contact to get to the line and get some easy looks that made it a really impressive performance.
And the NBA returned to London.
It did. This was the number one moment of the week for me. It was a packed out O2 arena down at Greenwich in London, where the Toronto Raptors beat the Orlando Magic 106-103 in overtime in front of a sellout crowd. And Lowry and DeRozan were the real stars for the Toronto Raptors to get this one over the line and continue their nice four-game winning streak. But Victor Oladipo took over in the fourth to bring the Orlando back from one of three double-digit deficits in this game to hit the shot to force overtime. And the best part of this game, even for me, I feel, was went into overtime, but a lot of the British fans left after full time, and I reckon it's because they're all soccer fans and they thought that NBA games finish in a draw. They didn't realise there was another period to come.
That's hilarious. Hey Tom, give us the website and also your Twitter handle again for people to read more from you.
Yep, so over at believethehypenba.com to catch all our stuff and the podcast over there, and then on Twitter at BTHypeNBA.
Awesome, Tom. Thanks for that.
Perfect. Thanks, Brett.